to CZ Movies. My name's Colin. I am the C. Joining me is Zijan the Z. Hello, Zijan.
Hey, Colin. Today is the day we're going to get cancelled.
Today is the day we're going to get cancelled. That is that is correct. We've had a good run.
Well, I've never been cancelled before.
Are we both getting cancelled or is it just me?
I have no idea.
We'll find out. I don't think I've been cancelled before. I mean, I'm not sure I've ever been high profile enough to be cancelled.
That's true.
This could be our employers could be informed. We could have people throw garbage at us in the street.
I highly doubt that. I'm pretty sure people have a lot more time on their hands than do that.
Yeah. I think we'll probably be safe. But that's the most exciting sizzle we've ever had for the podcast.
I know, right? What a way to start a podcast.
Yeah, enjoy it while you can. Although people who get cancelled then go on to have very lucrative podcast careers, don't they?
Exactly, right? Yeah, you just lean into that.
This could be our ticket to stardom.
Yeah. This is it, Colin. This is the episode.
It's about damn time. We're talking about Barbie today. That's what
I know.
We've also got a quiz on the Kingsman films. We're talking about the films of Idris Elba and much, much more.
Yeah, but guess which one of that is the one that's going to get us cancelled.
I might go for all three. I reckon I can get...
But the Idris Elba films, Colin.
I reckon I can get cancelled talking about Idris Elba's films. I'll just do a long rant about how he should never be James Bond. We'll get to it. We start, though, as we always do, with movie news. Not that there's much of it.
Nope, not much of it. I think mostly because the strikes are still going on.
Yes.
So most of the movie news are basically repercussions of the strikes. The first one being that Dune Part 2 could be pushed back to 2024. And this is a big could as well.
So they finished making it, right?
They have.
So is it because they can't publicize it?
Exactly.
Okay.
It was slated to be released in November. I think November the 3rd. It's basically all to do with marketing. They are just worried that if the major names are not, you know, there to promote the film, they may struggle. But it's a bit weird though with Dune Part 2. I mean, given the name, it's Part 2.
Yeah,
if
just
people
liked
Part 1 of it, they would go and watch Part 2.
Marketing done. Did you like Dune 1? Dune 2 is happening. It's more of the same.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? I mean, it makes more sense if it's something brand new.
Yeah.
But if it's Dune Part 2, come on. It's already in the name.
Yeah. I wasn't going to say it, but I don't think that's going to be affected by this. There have been a few things announced, which we'll get to, but you always just think, when you hear it, it's like, yeah? How do you know what's going to happen? And they'll be like, next year we're going to make such and such. Like, you don't have a clue. But there is some good news, Zijan, amongst all this strike, is that the indies have been given permission by SAG-AFTRA to keep shooting. Mm-hmm. Including our friends at... our good friends at A24. Independent movie studio that makes some fantastic films, things like Room, Moonlight.
They did Everything Everywhere All at Once last
year. Yeah, of course. Mid-90s. They make a lot of stuff, but I think there was Invisible Man was them. There's lots of stuff that is very well received, but they're an indie, so they can keep going for reasons I didn't bother reading. And there's a long list of films that that are currently in production, or soon to be. I only just noticed that there's two films called Mother Mary and Mother May I. And I want
I saw that as well.
That's great. Are they connected, do you think?
I have no clue. So the reason why they're not striking is because, they are not with part of the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers. So that's the one, the big studios.
Oh, they're the ones who are saying... They're the ones who are being negotiated with.
Exactly. The ones who are not paying screenwriters and actors. So they're not part of it.
I think they are paying them.
But not as much.
I feel like to get this podcast to be properly... to get my first cancellation, maybe we should pick sides on this. Just go really hard.
Okay.
Well, you seem to have picked the one that's in favour of artists and creators and stuff. So I guess I'm in favour of the money, man.
Yeah, go on. I'm sure you'll get lots of support there, Colin.
Isn't it true that what we most love about movies is the bottom line?
Yeah, that's all we care about, the box office returns.
I don't know. I do feel that some of the demands are a little unrealistic. when...
Oh, but that's the whole part of negotiating, right? You go extremes and meet in the middle.
Yeah, yeah. Because some of the stuff with the... some of the fears about AI seem a bit overblown to me. It feels like anytime there's any kind of development in any sphere, people get worried about it. And I think no sensible studio is going to be like, all our scripts are going to be AI now. We're not going to have any actors anymore. But I say, I guess you need sensible limits. But are you watching Secret Invasion?
I was. Then I got bored.
Okay, it's all finished now. But
I hear.
I think the AI introduction might be the best bit.
I got really bored. I finished the fourth episode, and then I was like, ugh, do I need to finish more? I just can't bring myself to it. It's just
I'm just saying, if we want human writers to make out they're worth a lot of money, they need to start writing better than that.
Yes, definitely better than that. What a waste of actors as well.
Yeah, I have finished watching it, but
should I finish it?
I mean, you might as well, but I think there's a couple of spoilers for anyone who's still watching this, which I guess is no one. But Gaia, who was played by Emilia Clarke, she's alive for one thing, but also she's now by far the most powerful person in the entire MCU.
Yep, I read that. And I was so annoyed by that.
And it's like, what are you going to do anything with that? What's going on?
Yeah.
With great power comes great responsibility. Anyway. I'm just saying, if you want to be paid more, write better. That's what I'm saying.
Well, we were speaking about box office earlier and movies making lots of money. Last weekend was Barbenheimer weekend.
Yes, it was.
And Barbenheimer weekend made loads of money. I think it's probably one of the strongest openings in box office history ever. Barbie opened with $155 million. Oppenheimer went with $80.5 million. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's been very good. I've seen it's the biggest opening weekend for a female director ever, Greta Gerwig with Barbie. I did read, and I haven't been able to verify this in a row, but I think it's true, that Oppenheimer is the biggest second place opening weekend for a film ever. I guess when it's a huge film, most other films try and avoid it.
I think it's fantastic, though, for like non-franchise films in general. Like the fact that these kind of films can do well.
I mean, I guess obviously Barbie is a very well-known IP,
but it's a
new film. It's not a film franchise, although we'll come on to that. And Christopher Nolan almost is a one-man franchise.
Pretty much, yeah.
I will be talking about Oppenheimer later, but I must admit the whole Barbenheimer meme thing did start to grate on me a little bit. The kind of... maybe slightly performative, isn't this hilarious thing that the internet was doing.
But it's kind of worked though, didn't it?
Like, quite a charm, yeah.
If there's anything, like, you can't fault the marketing of these two films at all. Like, honestly, the amount of people who wear pink and who put themselves on TikTok wearing pink just to see Barbie.
You're on TikTok, Susan?
No, I'm not.
How do you know this?
Yeah, because some of the TikTok things come on YouTube and Instagram, that's why. But... it's just incredible. Like, if you should give those marketing people a pay rise, man.
Although it feels like it's very much the Barbie marketing people who are doing this. I've not seen any Oppenheimer marketing people trying to jump on this.
But the Nolan fan base is huge, though.
Yeah, well, I'd say clearly not as large as the Barbie fan base. I went to see it with your friend, my friend Dave Parkfroud and Victoria and their children.
Both films.
Just Barbie. And I own a pink jacket now. And there was some discussion of me wearing it to watch Barbie, but I didn't end up doing that.
I think most guys have a pink shirt anyway, in general. I think pink shirts for work, it looks really good.
Good question. I don't have a pink shirt, but I do have a pink blazer.
Yeah. Kind of the same.
Yeah.
Ish.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they're both pink clothing. Yeah. I would have certainly not stood out at my cinema that was about... It was about at least 30% pink. We'll talk about it when we talk about Barbie. Mm. And, spoilers. I've seen Oppenheimer in Zijan. I believe you haven't. So so I'll be talking about that a little bit. Now, you say that it's a standalone film, but it's about to become a franchise, it seems. Our friends at Mattel are very excited by the fact this movie has done well. And are planning movies for so many of their properties, apparently. Including, but not limited to, Rock'em Sock'em Robots, Uno, which I'm sure they announced Uno already. but various others. I'm sure I saw something saying they're developing like 30 different products or something. But the one that's moved along the furthest, apparently, is Lily Collins playing Polly Pocket, as directed by Lena Dunham.
I feel like they are drawing the wrong conclusions from this.
Yes. Yes, I think you're right. What is this? Again, this feels like AI did this. It's like, name a product, name an actress, name a female director. I don't think Polly Pocket will do well if it indeed gets made.
No, I think, like, I mean, Barbie itself... I mean, Barbie is quite a well-known international brand, right? Polly Pocket, well, to be fair, though, I don't have, daughters.
No.
So I have no idea what's hot right now.
We're maybe out of our depth here, as we'll become clear when we talk about Barbie. But yeah, this. My only surprise is just how quickly they rushed this out. I know Barbie was predicted to do well, but to have a director, script, actress all lined up ready to go, fair play to them, I suppose. Can't wait for Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
What else does Mattel own?
I don't know. I thought they only owned Barbie. Who? Are you Googling this?
I'm Googling this. Mattel products. They own Hot Wheels, Fisher-Price, American Girl, Thomas and Friends, as in Thomas the Tank Engine.
Yeah, I'm sure that has been a movie made of.
That's been so much. And they own Mega. I don't know what that is. Yeah. There you go, Hot Wheels. Oh, yeah, Hot Wheels and Matchbox, I think. Two different car products.
I mean, those could be films. I mean, they're making a Gran Turismo film.
Yeah, goodness me. Oh, Barney. Yes, they're making Barney the movie or something. Dear me. Yeah, I'm sure, and there'll almost certainly be a Barbie sequel in there.
I'm certain that this is just all the... it's just because Barbie's making so much money right now. I'm pretty certain most of these films will just go off and we'll forget about it eventually.
You're probably right. You're probably right. We can only hope. But some of those were announced already.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to watch them anyway. So,
wow. Not even the Uno movie.
Definitely not the Uno movie. Okay. Especially the Uno movie.
It stars Lil Yachty, apparently.
Good for him.
Yeah.
My last bit of news is that Superman Legacy has added another cast member, and this time it's Anthony Carrigan from Barry fame. He'll be playing Metamorpho.
Oh, yeah.
Who is a guy who can transmute his body into various elements.
Elements, like in the movie Elemental.
Yes, like that.
Cool.
Which I still haven't seen.
No, you're not missing much. Okay, cool. I don't really know who that is. Barry, that's a sitcom or something, is it?
That's a sitcom. I saw his picture. He was bald, so I thought, oh, he's gonna be Lex Luthor.
I could have done default.
They still don't have a Lex Luthor.
I'm in. I actually, when I started shaving my head and with the beard, I did think I looked like John Cryer as Lex Luthor. John Cryer played Lex Luthor in the Arrowverse, all the CW stuff. And he went beard. Cool. I'm sure they'll keep announcing those. The only other thing I've got is apparently Paramount CEO Brian Robbins has said they're going to move away from releasing original animated movies in cinemas and instead will focus on existing properties. Isn't that dispiriting?
And this is why it's a good thing that Barbie and Oppenheimer did well.
Yes.
That is, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it would just be franchises the whole time.
Yeah, and if it's Warner Brothers released Barbie, and their franchise films are tanking, so...
Yeah, so hopefully they'll see this as a sign. Yeah. They won't.
Barbie films from here on out.
Yeah.
We move on then to See or Not to Zed, the segment where we talk about films we've recently seen and tell you, the listener, whether you should see them or not. Zed them. Wow, we move so quickly to that. I'm gonna have to think of things to say about Barbie. Zijian, you know what I'm going to talk about, but what are you going to talk about?
I'm going to talk about Robot.
The animated film?
No.
Okay.
Robots is a film on Amazon Prime. It stars Shailene Woodley.
Oh, yeah. Oh, with Jack Whitehall.
and Jack Whitehall.
Yes.
Yeah, based on the 1973 short story, The Robot Who Looked Like Me. They are Elaine and Charles, who use Android doubles of themselves to avoid the time constraints of dating. But lo and behold, there are robots fall in love with each other.
Oh, yeah.
And the robots end up stealing the identities of their owners and go on the run.
Classic.
And chaos ensues.
I've seen the trailer for this and it didn't entice me.
Yeah, for a comedy, it's not really that funny.
Okay.
Yeah.
It seemed quite crude as well.
It is quite crude. I think they use the F word quite liberally.
Okay.
And not necessarily for the favor of the plot in any shape or form. It's just, yeah. I just can't actually think of a part where it's actually funny. It's supposed to, that's the thing. It's touted as a sci-fi romantic comedy. I mean, even the romantic part is quite tenuous at best. But yeah, the main protagonists, if you see the trailer, they're quite insufferable. You know, given the premise as well. But the antics they come across, they don't come across as funny at all.
Okay.
Yeah, and ultimately, like at the end of the day, the consequences, it did not really seem earned.
Okay.
So, not a great film.
Yeah. Also, Jack Whitehall and Shailene Woodley don't strike me as they'd have much chemistry as a couple.
And you will be correct.
Okay.
I mean, their robot halves have chemistry with each other. That's why they are... but they're robotic.
Okay.
So, it makes more sense that chemistry was robotic. So, yeah, okay. But then their human counterparts... was definitely, the chemistry was just really bad.
Well, Zijian, from chemistry to physics, I've been watching Oppenheimer, the second half of Barbenheimer, the, I guess, biopic of Robert Oppenheimer, or J. Robert Oppenheimer, inventor of the atomic bomb, as played by Cillian Murphy, directed by Christopher Nolan. This has obviously, as we've said, done very well at the box office, and it was heavily anticipated by a lot of people. Not including me, really. I think, as I said on this podcast many times, I've stopped watching Christopher Nolan films, and then I thought, well, actually, everyone's going to be talking about it. I'll cave and watch it. And it's definitely better than his last three films. I enjoyed this film. I thought it was good. I made no secret the fact that I did not like Tenet or Interstellar or Dunkirk. Tenet, in particular, I thought was ridiculous. It couldn't be heard or understood. This is actually a surprisingly standard film. It's not quite Cradle to Grave, but you do kind of, you see a young Robert Homer and you move through time with him. Some of the early publicity, or later publicity maybe, was talking about being in five different timelines or something like that, which sounded really confusing. But it's, whilst it does jump back and forth a bit, I'd say no more than a normal film. And it's mostly focusing on chronological movement through Oppenheimer's life. It's got a strong cast. Cillian Murphy, as mentioned. Emily Blunt plays his wife. Florence Pugh is in it, and naked most of the time she's in it. Slightly odd choice to make her naked quite as often as she is. Robert Downey Jr. is fantastic in this film, playing, I'm not sure if he's a senator or playing some sort of, I don't want to spoil too much, but a politician involved in some hearings that you see later in the film. He is almost certainly going to be Oscar nominated. I think he was fantastic in that film. It is too long. It's 3 hours long.
I was going to ask that.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be as long as it is. That's my feeling about all films worth 2.5 hours. So it's no different here. And it does drag a little bit after a while, because obviously it's building up to the atomic bomb itself. Well, you'll have seen the publicity that there actually is like this, a real life huge explosion. Understandably, that isn't the explosion over Hiroshima or Nagasaki. It is a kind of, it's a test explosion to make sure it works, because you can't really have the culmination of the film being an actual kind of thing that killed
lots of people.
Countless people, yeah. Mm. A lot of it is kind of looking at the ethics of it and Robert Oppenheimer, his changing views. I think there's a line Matt Damon has in the film saying, I don't know whether we can be trusted with it, but I know that the Nazis can't. And this kind of idea that one or other of them is going to make it, so it needs to be them that makes it, which is then obviously completely undermined, kind of thrown apart, because it wasn't used until after Germany had surrendered. So so I think wherever you come from in your views of the atomic bomb, I think most of us are anti, you'll see kind of an interesting debate on that topic.
Okay.
What I would say, actually, and I've not seen this much in reviews at all. I think I did read one review that said it's a shame that Aaron Sorkin, or someone like Aaron Sorkin, wasn't writing the dialogue because they felt the last hour or so could have done with some snappier dialogue, which I think is fair. But also, it feels very much like an Aaron Sorkin film. I think it, much more so than a Christopher Nolan film, weirdly.
Who wrote this film?
I can't actually remember who wrote it. Not Aaron Sorkin. Someone I never heard of. But the way in which it plays around with different timelines, and there's this particular conversation that they keep coming back to, that there's this really like different views of who said what, and then kind of at the end revealed what was said, and it wasn't what some other people were expecting to be said. And that felt like a very Sorkin move, where you kind of just keep coming back to one conversation or one line and different perceptions of it. And I think Sorkin does it better. So whilst I did like the film, I don't think it was as successful as things like Trial of Chicago 7 or Molly's Game or something like that, which is full on Aaron Sorkin and does similar things, albeit on a smaller scale and without the big explosion everyone's very excited by. I think it is worth a watch, which is more than I can say for his last few, but it's definitely not as good as Inception or Memento or at least the first two Batman or Dark Knight films. So
I've got a question.
Yes.
What's the sound like?
So in the cinema I went to, it sounded great. I have spoken to someone who went to a different chain. I can't remember where they went, I'm afraid. Maybe Showcase. And they said that the sound was really, really badly mixed. So, yeah, I mean, when they had the explosion, it is very impressive. And I'll be honest, I'm not wowed by kind of, isn't that huge? And I can feel the vibrations in my seat and that kind of thing that I think some Christian Nolan fans are going to cinemas for. But if that's what the kind of thing you like, that's what you get.
I'm asking more because Christopher Nolan has...
All right. No, I could hear everything that was going on.
Thank goodness.
I almost felt at times that actually Christopher Nolan was almost kind of being sarcastic, because there's a lot of people saying things like Tenet, you couldn't really understand what was going on. And this, it felt like he almost over-explained things. So the later timeline was all in black and white. And I've seen various theories of that, but I think it was just to make it obvious which timeline we're in, I think. You get things like whenever someone makes a reference to another character, you see a clip from them earlier in the film. So it's like, oh, I spoke to Niels Bohr, and then you'll see a clip of Niels Bohr just to remind the audience who that was, which felt like it was almost Nolan saying, well, you didn't get the last one? I'm going to really spoon feed you this time. But I appreciated it, though. I appreciated being told what's going on. There's only one moment that I laughed out loud because it was so rubbish, which is... I talked about Florence Pugh being naked most of the time, but when there's a scene in which Cillian Murphy's character, Oppenheimer, is talking about her, and then someone else, his wife, Emily Blunt, kind of pictures them having sex in the seat. And it's like, this is so weird. I don't know what's going on here. But yeah, I'll save my views on Barbie until the next segment, I suppose. But I liked this one more than I thought I would.
Okay, that's good. I'll watch it when I have 3 hours to spare.
Well, that's it. I mean, of all the films that have come out recently, and I guess this is slightly spoiling my views on Barbie, Mission Impossible is definitely the best of them, in my view. We move on then to... That was... I guess it's slightly lengthier than we normally do, but that makes sense because it is the one that we're talking about. Barbie. Dijan.
Yeah, I don't really have a lot to say about Barbie, so I'm just writing down my notes and looking at it like, this is probably the shortest I've ever written on.
Yeah, I've written one bullet point, so...
any film that I have to review, but Barbie is directed by Greta Gerwig and written by Gerwig and her husband, Noah Baumbach, which we did a quiz on a couple of podcasts ago. Mm. The film follows Barbie, who's played by Margot Robbie, and Ken, who's played by Ryan Gosling, on a journey of self-discovery following an existential crisis. It features an ensemble cast that also includes America Ferrera, Kate McKinnon, Issa Rae, Rhea Perlman, and Will Ferrell.
Yeah, that'll do. And as you say, it features Barbie and Ken. As we know from the trailers, it features many Barbies and many Kens, and many of the people you just said are playing versions of Barbie or Ken.
Yes.
Albeit not quite all of them. It's worth saying, I guess, before we dive in, that I don't really know anything about Barbie. I have never played with a Barbie. I don't know the lore of Barbie.
Neither do I.
So we're two guys who might be out of our depth here. And I will say that the film assumes that no boy has ever played with Barbie. It's very much not a... whenever you see anyone playing with a Barbie or talk about anyone playing with a Barbie, it's always a girl, which is interesting, but I suppose probably statistically accurate. I will say, I thought it was often very funny.
Me too. There were some lines which were... I actually burst out laughing because they were very... I like all the meta lines, the one that winks at the audience kind of thing. I thought those were very clever. I think Ken is quite funny. I think Ryan Gosling...
He's a hilarious actor, Ryan Gosling. He's
very, very funny.
Yeah. And topless almost the entire movie.
Yeah, I'm sure their target audience won't mind.
They know their audience, yeah. He's a very funny actor. I know he's sometimes done very straight things like Drive, but he's also done lots of comedies before. Crazy Stupid Love is one of my favourites. And he is... Yeah, it doesn't even get grating, which you think it might, because it is quite over the top as a performance, but I think it really works. It's very funny. I love the bit where he puts a pair of sunglasses on top of another pair of sunglasses.
Yeah, that's the best bit.
That's very funny. Margot Robbie also, I mean, less comedic than Ryan Gosling, but really, I mean, she's a phenomenal actor as well.
I mean, she cannot be comedic when there's Ken beside her the whole time, right? You basically need a straight man kind of pairing.
She does get some good physical comedy as well.
She does.
But yes, she's playing what she described as stereotypical Barbie. I think one point she says, when you picture a Barbie, that's me.
That's what you...
As ever, we'll do spoilers and non-spoilers, or the other way around. This is not a film that I'm going to spend too long worrying about how the rules work. I know that's the thing I like to do, but the film tells me not to. Kate McKinnon told me not to.
Yes, exactly. because if you think too much of it, nothing makes sense.
Doesn't make sense at all. But I guess to explain the general concept is, there is a place called Barbie Land, which is where they live. There are also Barbie toys in the real world, which are maybe possibly somehow connected to these toys, to these Barbie characters.
Yeah, don't think too hard.
But don't think too hard. Yeah. And as you said, they go into the real world, where they meet America Ferrera, who's always great, and I think does a good job in this. She's the mother of a 13, 14-year-old, maybe?
A teenager, basically, who was grown out of Barbies. Margot Robbie's Barbie, went into the real world to find... the people who are supposed to be playing with her, to find out what's going on and why she's having an existential crisis. So, like, for example, if you see the trailers, she starts thinking about things like death, for example. She starts... Her heels touch the ground.
That was funny. I did like and again, I'm not an expert on high heels, but I did like the Barbie, the doll, has feet that are permanently high-heeled shape, apparently.
Yes.
And you see in the trailer that Margot Robbie's Barbie kind of walks out of her shoes like that, and then her feet hit the ground. It's like, why would anyone wear shoes like that if their feet weren't that shape? It's a good point. It's a good point, Barbie. It's a good point.
She starts getting cold showers, even though there's no water.
Oh, I thought it was very funny, the opening scene where she was drinking out of a cup with nothing in it and showering with no water. And if she wanted to get... Yeah, she wakes up in the morning, and rather than using stairs or something, she just floats down. Which
just like what they do in Barbie in real life, right? Because you don't get Barbie walk downstairs.
Which is slightly over-explained by Helen Mirren in voiceover, where she says exactly what you've just said. It's like, yeah, we could have probably worked that out, actually. Yeah. Oh, well. If I'm not entirely convinced the voiceover was needed at all. It felt like it was... I don't know, some voiceovers on films feel very much like they're there because test audiences didn't understand what was going on. This felt a bit like one of those to me. It's kind of like, is this not playing? Let's have Helen Mirren explain it.
Oh, except the funniest bit of the movie for me.
Is that in spoilers or is that... I mean, I don't think
that is in spoilers, but there's definitely in spoilers. But that's the funniest bit of the movie for me. And it required Helen Mirren to do a voiceover.
There you go. Well, I'm sure she's been well paid for it.
Yeah.
And there are other characters I've listed, but
there's not much to talk about them. Though. There's a thing like the only thing people that you need to talk about is probably Margot Robbie, which is spoken about. Yeah. Ryan Gosling. I mean, America Ferrera is pretty much a side character, but all the Barbies and all the Kens, they are just basically Barbies and Kens. There's nothing much to it. There's no depth to their character in any way. The plot doesn't revolve around them that much. It doesn't focus around them. You don't learn about them. Yeah.
Apart from maybe my favorite character in the movie, Michael Cera playing Alan. And again, this is a reference that I didn't understand, but apparently, so I think all our listeners will be familiar with Barbie and with her, I guess, boyfriend, Ken. Apparently there was for a while, Ken's friend, Alan, was also a doll that girls could buy and I think did not succeed.
Yes.
And so Michael Cera plays that character, which I think he's very funny. In fact, it's not really spoilers, but some of my favourite bits, which again, from context I understand, but I don't have the background understanding, is where they show various discontinued Barbies over time, or discontinued dolls.
Discontinued Kens as well.
And discontinued
Kens. Sugar Daddy Ken.
Sugar Daddy, yes.
Can you imagine?
Played by Rob Brydon.
Yeah, I know.
I did see him on Twitter saying, like, I hope you enjoyed my movie. That I really enjoyed the 2 hours I spent on it. yes, seems about fair. And yes, Will Ferrell is the manager or the CEO, rather, of Mattel.
Surprisingly, didn't do as much. I think I went in with the assumption that he's just going to reprise his role as the Lego boss man.
Lord business, yeah.
Yeah, by doing a lot there. But he doesn't appear as much as I think he would have. Thought he would have, yeah.
No, it's very much Barbie and Ken, isn't it? Maybe more Ken than people might be expecting. Well, I guess they've seen the trailers and they've seen the interviews. Ryan Gosling turns up a lot, but it is a lot of Ken. Because he goes with Barbie to the real world.
Yes, exactly.
Who do you think this movie is for? We've said it's doing very well at the box office. I do wonder whether that will play into second and third weekends. I suspect it might not.
It's difficult. I feel like I'll be touching on plot points as well when I start talking about who I think this movie is for as well, which is a bit tricky to say. But I don't think the people that they want to, the message that they want to give in the movie, I don't think the people who the message should be given to will watch the movie.
Well, that's intriguing. We maybe need to get into spoilers before we unpack
exactly
that.
Exactly right. I don't know how to...
Because... I don't know, in my cinema, I'll try and do it without spoilers, but in my cinema, there are a lot of young girls, I mean, youngish, kind of maybe preteen, and a lot of women in their 30s, maybe. And it feels to me that the second group is more what they're aiming for here, in that it's people who remember loving Barbie when they were a kid. Is who they're going for.
Yes, for nostalgia. Yeah. Nostalgic.
And I guess, like America Ferrera, parents... who remember that as well, and that's I think, yeah, and also I say a lot of young girls who love Barbie still, and I think that group, this is not the film for them, really. I mean, there are lots of straight to DVD Barbie movies that I'm sure they would love, but I saw it with my friends and their kids, and when it came up saying 12A, I think they're a bit surprised because they're expecting it to be a PG movie. And they seem to enjoy it, but I don't think it's a kind of a film that is aimed squarely at the preteen market.
I think they did a very good job with the marketing, isn't it? I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah,
that's
phenomenal.
That's the thing, right? Like, even by the way we are saying this, like, we do not, you know, trying to... I mean, after watching the film, yes, you're right, they're targeting that. But look at the trailers. Look at how they're promoting it.
Yeah.
Everyone's...
Because this was on our radar anyway. And based on the writers, the director, the stars, you think, yeah, this should be really good.
Yeah.
And so I was going to go and see this regardless, although it was better to go and see it with friends and their children, because then I can just pretend I was being dragged along. It's good times.
It looks good, though. Like, I give credit when credit is due. Like, it looks... The set is amazing. I saw the interview with Margot Robbie just basically explaining the set and bringing us into the house, the Barbie house, and the amount of detail that the people went into, you know, built the home, built the fake slide, built the fake swimming pool, built everything from scratch, you know, making sure that all the cartons of milk look like the Barbie cartons of milk. It's just incredible. The amount of effort and time they put into the set is just incredible.
Yeah, and this is where I guess it goes over my head, because Barbie's Dream House, I knew it was that. And it's nice today I have put the effort in for for fans of this stuff, so people can say, oh yeah, I recognise that doll, I recognise that car, I recognise that those clothing. I mean, and they kind of have their cake and eat it too, where they it is acting obviously as a brand kind of trying to sell stuff, because I mean it's Mattel, but they're kind of over the top saying this is Barbie's all in one jacket, this is Ken's cowboy hat, whatever, kind of appearing on screen. I don't know what an all in one jacket is, but let's say that's a thing.
Overall thoughts?
So some of them I'll save for spoilers.
Yep.
But it was, I felt it wasn't as good as I was expecting. It was funny and I enjoyed a lot of it, but the messaging, which we'll come on to, was incredibly muddled.
Yep.
I think they didn't know. I think there was about three different messages that came across, some of which I agreed with, some of which I didn't. Yes. And I thought it was very confused as to how they wanted to get that across.
I'm not disagreeing with you in any way. My first line in this review is convoluted messaging.
Yeah.
I have no idea what they were trying to say in the end. That's my first line in this review.
Yeah.
That I've written.
Because it's slight spoilers, but it ends with this long conversation with Barbie where I guess you can almost feel them trying to circle around and find what the point is. Yeah. It's like, and it goes on for about three times as long as it should, just drifting around. Because, I mean, it's fine to have a Barbie movie that doesn't have a message or doesn't have a big message, but they were clearly going for something. I just didn't really know what it was.
I don't know. It didn't quite land. I can say, like, I really enjoyed the first, like, one-thirds of the film when Barbie was there, you know, with all the Kens, and then Barbie left to the real world. I enjoyed those bits. Yeah. When Barbie went back to Barbie Land and then, oh no, then I just got very lost.
Yeah. So it was a very promising setup. And I said, I liked the America Ferrera character. I liked her daughter. I thought even Will Ferrell's character felt like it was a reasonable setup. But yeah, you're right. When they went back to Barbie Land, that's where it all kind of
collapsed.
Fell apart. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I left the cinema wondering, did I like the film?
Yeah.
I was thinking to myself, did I like the film? I like parts of it. Yeah. And
I think those are probably the bits that get remembered. I think this will be remembered for the Ken memes and for the outfits and things, and for Margot Robbie's performance more than some of the stuff in the second half, probably. Yeah. When we get Barbie 2, I imagine they'll pair it back a bit.
I'm not sure. Do you think like Ryan Gosling will come back to before Barbie 2?
Well, there was talk of a Ken spin-off, which
was there?
I don't think makes sense. But they seem to be having fun. I'm sure they'll throw a lot of money at them. I can see it happening. Yeah, the one thing, I guess, is the real world felt a lot less real than I was expecting as well. It felt equally silly. Even things
equally like... Equally over the top?
Yeah, so they go to the Mattel headquarters and all the staff are wearing the same thing, they've literally all got the same outfit, or the board has got the same outfit and sits in an unrealistic room. They chase after Barbie, and rather than actually chasing her, they're all running in a grid shape. It feels like it's part of a game rather than a kind of a real dichotomy between Barbie Land and real world.
Yeah,
but which is not a criticism. It's just that's not how I thought they would go about it. So it's interesting to see that.
Yeah, well.
Should we do some spoilers?
Yeah, let's do spoilers. Spoilers. Well, should I say my favorite funny bit? My favorite funny bit, yeah. It's when Helen Mirren did a voiceover about you shouldn't have casted Margot Robbie if you want to make a point of being beautiful. of not being beautiful.
Yes, that was I enjoyed it. I did laugh at that. So do you want to explain what you meant about how the people this is for aren't going to be there or something?
Yeah. I mean, as you can imagine, the Reddit forums have been in uproar over this film.
Yeah.
Especially since the more liberal ones are basically promoting it and saying this like the best film ever.
Yes,
and
okay.
The conservatives are obviously taking the complete opposite messaging. Basically are trashing this film as much as they can.
Yeah,
so this film is literally being used as good publicity for both of these factions, really.
Yeah.
Either way, they all generate publicity. But I think that part of the film's messaging, and this is where it will get lost as well, because they try and circumvent it and all that jazz. So what happens when they go back into Barbie Land? So Ken went with Barbie into the real world. Ken discovered, oh, the real world, because in Barbie Land, Kens are basically just side pieces. They don't really have their own agency. They're basically...
They're a joke.
They're a joke, essentially. So when he went into the real world, he discovers that, oh, over here, man has a lot of power.
Hmm.
Well, they have a lot more agency than they do back in Barbie Land, essentially.
Yes. Yeah.
So what happens was that he goes back into Barbie Land before Barbie did. And for some reason, I don't even understand how they happened. He turned the entire place into what people would consider in the real world a very alpha male kind of place where toxic masculinity would be thriving. Those would be the words that I would use. I'm pretty sure that's what they're trying to demonstrate.
And they explain it in the movie by saying the comparison they use is when the indigenous people in America... all got smallpox because they didn't have any antibodies. I'm not sure they use the word antibodies, but they're saying the Barbies here don't have any inkling of that they wouldn't be respected, so they've got no defense mechanism for when... And the word patriarchy features a lot in this movie, but when the patriarchy comes into town, basically.
I didn't get that. that was lost on me. So, essentially, you can get from one aspect of this film was essentially trying to, one of the messages of this film would definitely be saying that, toxic masculinity is bad.
Mm-hmm.
One of them would be that. And this will get lost in the end as well. once there's a resolution and all that. But this is one of the messaging. But that's why my point is saying that the more conservative of viewers who are not going to watch this film, it doesn't affect them, It's like preaching to the choir, basically. You're saying this, you're putting this kind of messaging to people who already are going to love this messaging, which is probably their point, to be fair.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Because at first I thought it was quite interesting that... So Ken is basically a nine-year-old girl's idea of what men are like.
Yes.
And that's funny, and it's actually quite perceptive, I think. Quite interesting. And when Ken is... someone in the real world asks him, does he have the time? And he's like, I've never been respected before. This is great. And you kind of see from his point of view that, yeah, it's nice for actually to be respected. I think there are about three different things going on in this film. One of the messages is about how women in the real world don't have it as good as little girls think they'll have it when they grow up. And that's because of, again, they talk about patriarchy a lot, but yeah, they're not respected as they should be. Or they're kind of expected to do way too much, like they're expected to become president like President Barbie, or they're supposed to be a doctor like Dr. Barbie, whatever else. And it's hard to be a woman. And great message. No problems with that. But I think the flip side from... And the second one, which I thought the film would actually become, and it kind of does for a bit and then moves away from it, is this kind of focus on children growing up and parents missing when their children were young. So America Ferrera turns out is the one who misses playing with Barbie with her daughter because she kind of misses that innocent age. And I think that's really quite beautiful. It's been done before. I mean, it's Toy Story 3. It's House of Pooh Corner. It's not a new idea, but I thought it was done nicely.
It didn't end in a full circle, though, right? Like, it feels like it just didn't land.
They just dropped it
completely. Okay. Like, you completely forgot that it was America Ferrera's doll that was doing this. But
And I thought that would be the point of the film, and at some point they shied away from that. But this is where I'm going to get cancelled, Zijan, for railing against a film about a doll. But I really feel this film does hate men, and I don't want to agree with people like Ben Shapiro and various conservative kind of clickbait people.
Yes.
But it's difficult to move away from that. They're basically saying and I get that Ken is a joke, but every man in this film is either dumb or horrible.
Yes.
Without exception, apart from maybe Alan, even he's quite dumb.
No, I completely agree with you. Like, there's nowhere in this whole film that even when they go into the real world that they don't meet a decent person. Like, a decent man.
Yeah, so they're immediately... Margot Robbie's character, Bobby, is sexually harassed. Even the policemen are sexually harassing her, basically, or commenting about it. Will Ferrell is incredibly dumb. The bit that got me is that even America Ferrera's husband, who is a Caucasian guy, he's learning Spanish, which is quite sweet. Nice thing to do. And even there, like, look at this dumb guy. He doesn't know Spanish properly.
Yeah.
Was that necessary?
I, I have to agree with you on this, Colin. Like, I, when I was going to this, you know, I have been exposed to all the clickbaits where this, they're saying that, oh, Barbie is man-hating and all that jazz. And when you're obviously thinking like, oh, no, this can't be true. I mean, people are probably taking the extremes on this, but it annoys me that it's actually true, because...
Because I don't want these people to be right.
Same. And the thing is, right, at the end of the film as well, when Ken was talking about how he needs his own, he needs to find himself and discover himself, you would think, oh, finally, we're going to start treating all the Kens with more respect. And then while the Kens were saying, oh, can we have a guy in the Supreme Court? And then Barbie just went and turned down and said, no.
We're not ready for that.
And like, what exactly are you trying to say here?
Because it felt like, you were saying in Barbie Land, the Kens are not respected. In the real world, the women aren't respected, which... let's move off whether that's a generalization or not. Let's respect everyone. You'd feel like would be the message you should get to.
Exactly.
I really enjoyed the line when Ken said that when he discovered the patriarchy wasn't about horses, he kind of went off it. So I did think that was very funny. But I guess my main problem with that isn't, I mean, I don't, for my, as a 37-year-old man, I don't need the Barbie movie to tell me that men are okay. What my worry is, I guess, is for the younger girls who are watching this film, who have been told, men, you can't respect men. And in fact, there's even a whole plot line where to defeat the Kens, the Barbies just lie to them and manipulate them. And it's like, is that the message we're giving to the younger girls watching this? Is that just lie and manipulate men because they're all dumb? That just, it's just such a shame. And I'd say, I don't need it to be a movie about men. It's a movie about Barbie, and if it's a movie about the female experience, then great. I can see how that works, but
I know exactly what you mean.
I don't want to be saying this. I don't want to be the guy who's like, the Barbie movie wasn't nice enough to men, but it's just such a strange thing to have done. But still, they look pretty good with those all the exciting different outfits. So that was something.
And it's still funny. Very funny.
And things like, what's his name? Kingsley Benadire, something like that. That's nice.
Kingsley Benadire. He was in Secret Invasion as well, right?
Yeah, he was very funny. I like him a lot. I've seen him a few things.
He's just like the sidekick of Ken.
Yeah, and Simu Liu, he was very funny. Lots of good performances. I mean, there's no bad performances in this movie, I don't think.
No, it's just... You said it right? Like, at the end of the day, right, I can't come out from this film saying, do I like this film? Because although I find it funny, although I think the actors are performing really well, I just think that the overall message is just like,
and the long conversation we talked about Barbie has with a woman playing the maker of Barbie,
Ruth Handler, which I thought
was very funny when they made a couple of references to her tax issues, which I didn't know anything about. And also, and just to show that the real world isn't the real world, the ghost of Ruth Handler is renting a room on the 7th floor of Mattel offices, which I thought was quite funny. Also, I did think, because they talked about Mattel having only ever had 2 female CEOs.
Yes.
And I thought, is that true? I'm assuming it probably is. It seems quite brave of them to put that bit in.
I mean, they do more than Barbies anyway.
They do Rock'em Sock'em Robots, as discussed. They do Uno. Exactly. Yeah. Every boy's favourite game, Uno. I only wrote one bullet point about this movie. And it was,
why is it?
Pride and Prejudice. Because I thought it was very funny when they... when they had that cliff of Colin Firth.
Oh, that's a good one, though.
That was very funny. And I was like, I can't remember the exact context, but they're talking about how sometimes as a woman you just need to watch 1995 Pride and Prejudice over and over again.
I like that a lot.
I think the bit where it was really on the nose is when America Ferrera was doing her long speech about how hard it is to be a woman. And I thought, there must be a subtler way to do this.
I think so, too. I didn't like that that much either. It was just so... Some parts are so in your face.
I also enjoyed the bit where they talked about Zack Snyder's Justice League.
That's always good.
That was funny. And since Warner Brothers make both, that was a... So there you go. What other film for girls can we trash talk? Let's have a go at Polly Pocket. So there you go. We've been cancelled.
They probably have. Like, I mean, the fans of Barbie the movie, I mean, they're reminding me of the Interstellar fans as well.
Okay.
at this point. Like, it's, I mean, surely I can't be the only. We can't be the only two people who see this, right? Surely people. What? Like, it's not just us, you know. I got friends on Mars that was telling me they cried three times watching Barbie. I was like, which part?
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the maybe bit, something is I'm missing. Maybe I'm missing something here.
I think the bit that's most likely to make me cry, which it didn't, but it, I can see it may have done, was the when you kind of cut to those memories of Barbie and you see it as America Ferrera having all the memories rather than her daughter. I think if you have a young daughter, or not a young daughter, a teenage daughter, that's probably a very moving moment. And in fact, I went to see it with a friend who has an 11-year-old daughter, and I think she said that rang very true for her. So. There you go. That's Barbie.
It's reviewed by two guys.
We move on then to the films of Idris Elba in the segment we like to call Actor Factor. One day we'll explain what the factor bit of that means, but it's not today.
It rhymes with actor. That's
You've seen through it. Do you want to talk us through some of the films of Idris Elba?
Yeah, I mean, Idris Elba played Heimdall in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, who's most well known as the gatekeeper in the Thor universe. So he was basically in all of the Thor films until his death.
Yes.
Spoiler alert, in Avengers Infinity War. But I think he appeared even in the last Thor film, in the post-credits scene.
He did, he came back,
Yeah, so he was in all the Thor films, basically.
And a couple of Avengers films, yeah.
A couple of Avengers films as well, so he was in that. He did a lot of voiceovers, so he was voicing the Jungle Book, the live-action Jungle Book. He was in Zootopia, which is actually a really good film.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
And he was in Finding Dory, which is not as good as his predecessor, that's for sure.
When he's not doing Marvel films, he's doing DC occasionally. So he was in the Suicide Squad, the Suicide Squad rather than Suicide Squad.
The better one, basically.
Basically playing the much better one, playing the new version of Will Smith's character. I know technically he's not, but basically, let's be honest.
He is. Yeah.
He was also the bad guy in Fast and Furious Hobbs and Shaw, which remains the only Fast and Furious movie I have seen. And he's no stranger to other blockbusters. He was in Star Trek Beyond and Ghost Rider 2.
Yeah.
Which I don't remember him in Ghost Rider 2. I'm also not 100% sure I've seen Ghost Rider 2. I put it on the list. I think I've seen it, but I'm not entirely sure. And he was also in a film called The Losers, which I remember being quite good, but I don't remember much about it. Chris Evans was in it. Again, it was a comic book adaptation, but kind of pre-Captain America. Chris Evans is one of the main stars in that, and I do have no recollection of Idris Elba being in it.
So also in Molly's Game.
Yes.
Which I cannot remember who he was in Molly's Game.
He had quite a big part. He was her lawyer.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah, they have some great scenes together.
Oh, I completely forgot that he was in it.
Really good film, Molly's Game. Which I mentioned earlier, in fact. The only other one I've seen, actually, is American Gangster, which I didn't really like.
Oh, I've not seen that.
Of these films, I mean, I think Molly's... Molly's Game is really good. I also have a real soft spot for Avengers Age of Ultron, which he's in briefly, which... Wow. Which I didn't love at the time, but it's probably the MCU film I've seen the most. I just keep coming back to it. I think it's really good. Uneven. And in fact, his bit is probably the worst bit in it. But,
it's because you like the Hulk and Natasha's...
That is a big part of it. But I think... I'm not going to lie. That is a big part of it. But the dialogue is so much better than you get with the Russos. And the action is so much better than you get with the Russos. So I'm going to controversially put that top, I think.
I like Molly's Game.
But if we need to agree, then we might need to say Molly's Game then.
Yeah, but I like Avengers Infinity War. Yeah. What's your least favourite?
I didn't like Star Trek Beyond much, but I didn't hate it.
Which one is Star Trek Beyond? Is it the second one or the third one?
Third one.
I cannot remember now.
Yeah. I don't hate any of these. Love and Thunder was very disappointing.
Thor the Dark World, Thor 2.
You think that was worse than Love and Thunder?
Oh, yeah, good choice. Mm. Good point. Because Love and Thunder with all the super kids annoyed me.
Yeah.
And all the Hemsworth offsprings annoyed me a lot.
I mean, it seems harsh to say it was his worst film when it was only in the post-credits, but that's how we do things here.
I did like the first bit with Natalie Portman. I like the part with Natalie Portman taking over Thor's helm, though.
Yeah, that was good. I wasn't. I mean, Hobbs and Shaw, I wasn't expecting to like. So I guess I've not really. It was just on.
Thor: The Dark World for me. I think it's slightly worse than Love and Thunder.
I'd probably say Love and Thunder is worse, but maybe because my expectations were higher. But okay, there you go. It's one of them. Next time we're doing a look back in Oscar, and I think we agreed, Zijan, that we'll do The Sound of Music.
That would be good, because we don't have a lot of time to watch a lot of things in the next couple of weeks.
No. I've bought it on DVD, ready to go. I think I've seen it. Pretty sure I've seen it.
Great.
But I'll watch it again. Not for a long time. Which means we move on to our quiz, and I will level with you, Zijan. It got to 6 minutes before we started recording, and I realised I'd forgotten to do my quiz questions. So this is very quickly knocked together.
This is going to be very embarrassing when I do badly again.
Well, it does mean I've not researched anything that I haven't written a question about. So do you want to kick us off?
Okay. In Kingsman: The Secret Service, Mark Hamill plays Professor James Arnold, who is held against his will. This is a new character which was created to replace which character in the comic books?
Mark Hamill.
That's correct.
I did know that.
Great story, though.
Yeah, that's fun. What is the title of the Kingsman film that is allegedly currently in pre-production?
What, The Blue Blood?
Yes.
Question two. The two robot dogs in Kingsman: The Golden Circle are named after which Elton John songs?
Ooh, okay. That's a good question. The two what dogs? Robert.
Two robot dogs.
Oh, robot.
Yeah.
Oh, after two of his songs?
No, after all right. After which song?
One all right. Song. Is it Benny and the Jets?
Yep, one's called Benny, one's called Jets.
Yeah, I only remember that from watching the film. That's not recent research. But speaking of dogs, what is the name of Eggsy's dog?
Oh no, I don't remember this. See, this is the thing. I'm going to go with Tabasco because I like the name for a dog.
Oh, that's a good name. But it's JB.
JB.
Apparently after Jack Bauer.
Tabasco is a much better name.
Yeah, it is a better name. Yeah.
Question three. Who received the codename Percival in the King's Man?
Do you want a character or an actor?
Character.
I mean, first, I don't know. Is it Eggsy?
No. He doesn't appear in The Kingsman. It's a prequel, right?
Oh, The Kingsman. Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. Is it Rasputin?
It's not Rasputin. It's King George V.
Okay. I didn't finish that film. I thought it was rubbish. But speaking of The Kingsman, who appeared in a mid-credits scene of that film?
Huh. I feel like your research, when you do it last minute, may cover things that I've not mentioned. I've not looked at.
I did actually know this before I did my research.
Which character?
Which person? I'll give you a slight clue. It's a real life person. Appears in a mid credit scene of The Kingsman.
Let's go with Elton John.
Oh, it's Adolf Hitler.
Oh, okay, that makes more sense.
Because they're collecting a legion of bad guys or something. I don't know.
Question four. What's the motto of the Kingsman spies, which we learn comes from the primary villain in The Kingsman?
Oh, I didn't know that. Now, something about something makes the man. It can't be the clothes make the man, can it? I'm going to say the clothes make the man.
No, it's alliterative. Manners maketh men.
Manners maketh man. Damn it. Question four. Which drink is Channing Tatum named after, or his character, in The Golden Circle?
Oh, no. It's either whiskey or tequila. Crap. I'm going to go with tequila.
Correct.
Yay. Yes. My last question for you is, Taron Egerton reprised his role as Eggsy in a crossover short film with which animated character? Unveiled in 2017 Comic-Con.
Was it Archer?
It is Archer.
I didn't even read. I just saw a subheading on Wikipedia that said Archer, and I didn't read the rest of it.
Yeah, it is Archer.
Okay, that puts me 3-2 ahead. So for this one to pull level, who co-wrote the first two films with Matthew Vaughn?
That would be Jane Goldman.
It would indeed. Good work. Mrs. Jonathan Ross, I think.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I think that's right. Next time, Zijan, we are going to be quizzing on Apple TV Plus original movies.
Oh my goodness.
I don't know if it's called Apple TV Plus. Is that right? Apple Plus? TV
How
Plus?
How many are there?
Not that many.
Okay, good.
Not that many. I mean,
if they're coming out as 20, Colin, I'm not going to. This is not going to be a way.
I mean, it might be 20, but it's not many that anyone have heard of. What is our main topic for next time, Zijin?
We are going back 10 years.
It's finally true. I think that's the third time you've told me that's the year.
I think so too. It's
finally true.
2013 in film.
Cool, and we will see you then.
Bye.